Chapter 5. 6 o'clock. The last room. The death house. Smaller and more crowded than he imagined as he follows the warden in. Maybe 10 foot by 12, smaller than the cell they just left. And right there in the middle, taking up the whole room, the gurney. It's big, silver metal with white foam pads and thick brown leather straps with silver buckles. There are 5 men standing around the gurney, a couple of them looking towards Jesus, some averting their eyes, looking at the floor or fiddling with the buckles. Jesus realizing that each of them is manning a part of the gurney that will relate to a part of his body, legs, arms, head. All the Huntsville staff hoping the same thing they always hoped on these days, that the guy wouldn't resist and that everything would go smoothly. The warden takes his place at the head of his team, and the man next to him, an old, powerfully built guy in his late 50s with silver hair, says to J.C.,
"Son, I need you to hop up here with your head at this end and your feet down there."
"Sure," J.C. says. Most of the men in this room have taken part in over 100 executions. They have seen men crying, men babbling and singing songs. They have seen men twitching uncontrollably, men whose hearts have been pounding so hard you can see them beating against their shirts. They've never seen one this calm. It takes them just 30 seconds to strap him in, his arms extended out to each side of him, reminding him of striking a similar posture on that hill a couple of lifetimes ago. Well, J.C. thinks, at least we're lying down on foam pads this time. Progress of a kind, even if the nature of the offense remains the same. Atavism, he thinks. "Thank you," he says to the last man as he finishes strapping his left leg in. The guard manages the tiniest of smiles, the most imperceptible of bows, as he follows his colleagues out of the room. The guy will remember Jesus thanking him for tying him to the execution gurney for the rest of his life. The man who tied him down leaving the room now as 2 others enter, each quickly taking one of his arms and swabbing the insides of his wrists with rubbing alcohol. Medics. J.C. has, as a couple of junkies have had occasion to tell him, good ropes, and it only takes them a couple of minutes to hook the 2 IV lines up, one into each arm, the clear plastic tubes running along the gurney, down across the floor, and disappearing into the wall to his right. There is a mirrored panel in the wall above where the IV lines disappear, and Jesus pictures the poor guy sitting in there, flexing his fingers, getting ready to push the plungers on those syringes. Would his hands tremble? Jesus wonders. Or was it just another day in the Corps? It is difficult for him to move his head too much, but he turns fractionally in the direction of the mirrored window and smiles softly, hoping to reassure whoever is in there that he feels no animosity towards them. Like Dylan said, only a pawn in the game. Like those troopers, killing and dying in the cold Texas mud. Now he turns to look straight ahead, looking through the gun sight of his feet, through heavy perspex windows to where people are beginning to file into the viewing room. Warden, Jesus says. It is only J.C., the warden, and the chaplain in the room now. Am I allowed to ask who's in there?
The wives and parents of 3 of the troopers who died, members of the press, and a couple of people from the FBI and the BATF,
the warden says softly. Jesus watches as they take their seats, a few of them pulling their chairs right up against the glass. The journalists have notepads out. One of the women, a pretty young blonde girl, is staring straight at him, her features just a snarl of hatred. An older couple are crying, cradling each other. At the back, in neat dark suits and ties, stern expressions on their faces, Jesus sees Dan Toss and Don Gerber, and remembers their testimony from the trial. Their phrases like reason to believe, probable cause, and necessary force. Now the warden speaks, his voice louder and more formal than it was a moment before, as he asks,
"Do you have any last words you wish to say?"
JC sees that a boom microphone is lowering from the ceiling. He sees the clock on the wall, 6:11. Hardly more than 10 minutes since they came in. He thinks for a long time about injustice, cruelty, and the almighty dollar, about hypocrisy and power ballots, about ego, ambition, and politics. The usual reason stuff got done down here. Jesus looks at the glass, at the hateful, grieving faces, and speaks softly towards the microphone. "When the truth of all this comes out, none of you should be too hard on yourselves. The Bible's mostly a crock, but there's no other way to say this, folks. You know not what you did. Just try and remember," he smiles. "Be nice." He looks at the warden and nods. The warden looks towards the mirrored panel and removes his spectacles. The signal. Behind the mirror, the first plunger going down, the sodium pentothal flowing through the clear tubing towards JC's left wrist. As the powerful sedative hits him, he is reminded of the very few times he tried heroin. Once in a motel room in San Francisco, was it? At that place where all the bands stay. The Phoenix? Him and some bass player slumped in the shower stall. How the bass player had said that if God had made anything better than heroin, then he'd kept it for himself. And JC thinking about how there was maybe something in that, but that ultimately it was wrong, because heroin was basically morphine and was intended for pain relief. And why would you need pain relief in a place where there was no pain? But then again, just because you didn't need something wasn't any kind of argument against wanting to alter your consciousness anyway. And who was it that said that maybe God left certain drugs on the planet as a way of accelerating our evolution? And maybe we can go to the moon, and shards of millions of other conversations he'd had in his time down here, ebbing through his brain as his body prepared for shutdown. More plungers going down now, firing the two remaining compounds in the three-drug cocktail towards his right wrist. First, the chromium bromide, a muscle relaxant that will cause his lungs and diaphragm to collapse. And then, finally, the potassium chloride, the drug that will stop his heart. And here it comes. Not the cliche about heading into the light and floating above his body and seeing all the people in the room below him. Just the sense of, hang on a goddamn minute now. This hurt. Holy shit, this hurt. Even through the heavy wash of sedatives, he can feel the bromide corroding into his lungs, his heart, his spleen. Everything collapsing, liquefying from within, like his whole body is suddenly a vessel of bile, acid. It's like having blistering acid pumped into every crevice of your insides. He tries to scream, but can't. Still conscious enough to experience all this agony, but too far down the well of sedation to do anything. Like having the worst, most lucid nightmare possible, where you can see the room around you, but cannot snap awake. He feels something come loose in his stomach, things collapsing, falling in on themselves. And suddenly, despite all he knows, he wants so very badly to live, to hang on to a shred of life. The blinding glare of the lights, the warden's inclined head, the black microphone like a terrible insect, trying to scream again, but feeling blood and liquefied tissue hacking up into his windpipe, inhaling his own collapsing lungs and such terrible, terrible pain. And then, suddenly, he's dissolving into a billion atoms, every single one of them a tiny hymn, and